happen from the calculations which we did, which was that finding out that the Gauss constraints generates rotations on the internal index, and the Gauss constraint itself is the vector with respect to the internal index. So what we have here is that the Gauss constraint with lambda, you know, rotates basically this internal index, which again can be put over to a rotation of lambda prime, and this is basically just an infinitesimal rotation of a vector lambda prime by lambda. So we have this relation, and the same holds for the curvature, which also just had an internal index, the curvature constraint or flatness constraint. This came with one internal index. So what happens here is that n is rotated. N is basically the smearing of the flatness constraint, nj. And these can be easily concluded from just the fact that the flatness constraints are just functions of the holonomy. So are there further questions to this stuff? So the important fact here is that these constraints form a constraint algebra in the sense that on the right-hand side, you just have constraints again. That is, changing a constraint by something which is generated by constraints gives you again a constraint. And these things are called first-class constraints for the simple reason that there exist also second-class constraints. And you just have to be aware that not all constraints are of this form. So there are additional constraints sometimes which don't commute and which you have to treat very differently. And these actually appear in 4D gravity in some approaches. and gauge systems always lead to first class constraints. So let me say something or summarize what happens for systems with gauge degrees of freedom. Because we have to go on and quantize. And for that, we have to understand what actually happens classically first. And so what we have seen, we started with our phase space, which is usually even dimensional, which I cannot really draw. So this is phase space. And we found out that we have these constraints, which phase space points have to satisfy in order that these phase space points allow for a solution of the equation of motion. So we have in our hypersurface a constraint, in our phase space, a constrained hypersurface. And only these points lead to solutions. So now we have also this closed constraint algebra. And I told you with the Poisson brackets, you basically calculate how a constraint changes under the flow generated by the constraint. So every phase space function generates a flow, and we see that the flow of the constraint gives us another constraint. That means if we are drawing the flow generated by the constraint, it's usually not a straight line, but in this case it's actually circles, but it will stay on the constrained hypersurface. No, it's not six dimensional. It should be 12 dimensional. Let me. Three. Yeah. So these are six plus six. So we have these components, A runs from 1 to 2. J runs from 1 to 3. Gives us 6 plus 6 dimensional phase space for each spatial point. So 6 times 6 plus 6 times infinity. And indeed, we could count the constraints and figure out that if we would basically just consider one phase space point, which we cannot, but basically pair spatial point, this constrained hypersurface is six dimensional. And this phase space is basically 12 dimensional. So it's all times, you know, I don't know if I introduced this notation, you know, times the number of phase space of spatial points, which is usually infinity. So so this is a bad notation, but just to keep that in mind. So this will turn out to be six dimensional. And then it's hard to draw an orbit here. Because as we will see, I wanted to draw an orbit. So this picture will be actually for not be totally applicable for 3D gravity. Because in 3D gravity, what will happen is that the entire constrained hypersurface is one orbit locally. So we have six constraints. They generate six different directions. So locally, you basically fill the constrained hypersurface with just one orbit. But in some systems, there are these topological degrees of freedom. And that gives you just a finite number of degrees of freedom. So here, to make it a bit more interesting, I basically just draw these lower dimensional gauge orbits. So this is a flow. These can be higher dimensional, I can just, but I cannot really draw lots of dimensions. So this is a flow generated by the constraint. So this would be, you know, if you take one constraint, you just get one dimensional flow, but in one direction, but start with, take arbitrary combinations of, say, two constraints, then you get a two-dimensional orbit, and so on. You take arbitrary combinations of three independent constraints, you get a three-dimensional orbit, and so on. Okay. So the flow generated by the constraints stays on the constrained hypersurface. And we've earlier argued that these transformations, which are generated by the constraints, are actually gauge transformations. We have seen that in the covariant discussion. So this flow connects gauge equivalent phase-based points. Okay, that allows us to define a gauge orbit. That is basically a set of all points, phase space points, P prime, which can be connected to P by a flow generated by constraints. So since we have six constraints here per spatial point, we will actually also get basically these six dimensional times infinity gauge orbits, which means that, you know, since this is already six dimensional, you basically fill up your constraint hypersurface with seems just one orbit. But again, they're basically systems where if you take the equivalence relation, you are left over with a finite number of degrees of freedom. So this means that actually physical states, you know, you have to identify physical states which in this case means solutions which are not gauge equivalent. No. With gauge orbits, so if this would be a one-dimensional gauge orbit, you can be here and get a solution, or you can be here, you get another solution. However, it is physically the same solution. And so in theory, you're only interested in, you know, basically the equivalence class of these things. And again, locally, you could make up a gauge fixing which is supposed to intersect every orbit in one and only one point. And the problem is that these gauge fixings are amazingly hard to find or impossible to find because the orbits are usually not just straight lines, but very complicated objects and not even manifolds and so on. Because here you have circles or higher dimensional things. So you could introduce gauge fixings. You need as many gauge fixings as there are constraints. So if you have a constraints labeled by capital K, you need TK gauge fixings. And for later, let's write these gauge fixings as some phase space functions. So these are just some phase space functions. which you fix to some parameters tau k. So these tau k's are at the moment are just numbers. And you see, to be a good gauge fixing, this gauge fixing has to be basically go transversely to the gauge orbits. So you don't want, if you basically generate a flow for these gauge fixings, for the gauge fixing function t, no, it should basically go in this way. That means it, the flow of the constraint has really to change the gauge fixing functions. Otherwise, if the flow would be not touch the gauge fixing, you know, you would basically get this condition satisfied on several points along the orbit. So if the gauge fixing would be constant along the orbit, that would be bad because it doesn't pick you out one point. So what you need is that this matrix, you know, generally it should be basically invertible, which means that this as a matrix should have non-vanishing determinant. So ideally, as we will see, or as we will later see in examples, we will see an example where more or less this is delta kj. But again, the problem is that this is amazingly hard to achieve globally in phase space. Okay, so these gauge fixings are exactly, you know, the same which you might have encountered in other gauge systems. So it really just means gauge fixing. The last notion which we need is the notion of a physical observer. Here, as I told you, we identify the gauge orbit with a physical state. And different points on these gauge orbits give us gauge equivalent solutions. And so if you have a phase space function, which gives us different results, we get basically different results for gauge equivalent solutions. So this phase space function doesn't tell us anything physical. It tells us something about our choice of gauge, but it doesn't give us No, so there's basically some gauge information in this phase space function, because there's a bit of observable information, of course, in every phase space function. So what we are looking for would be phase space functions which are constant along the flow of the constraints. So physical observable is constant on the gauge orbit so to every gauge orbit it gives just one number. Yeah.
Why do we ask the determinant of that matrix being
non-zero? So we want basically this ensures that the gauge fixing conditions, so these gauge fixings are this, I have this downstairs, you select some phase space functions, which I call T, and you demand that these are equal to some constants, for instance, zero. Yeah, for simplicity, assume they are zero, these constants. So this defines you another hypersurface. So the gauge fixings, you know, they will be like an additional set of constraints. But they don't have to commute with these original constraints. So what would be bad is if these gauge fixings, if these constants T Now, if you have just a one-dimensional system, say a one-dimensional flow, and you would have a function t, you know, this is flow generated by C, by one constraint, and if you have a t which is left invariant by t, by the constraint, it means that, you know, demanding tau is equal to constant, you actually have this yellowish line parallel or exactly tangential to this thing. So you want to avoid that, and demanding that this is some other number, you get basically a transversal cut. You know, so that would mean that this is t equal constant. And the higher dimensional generalization of these conditions is that this matrix has to be invertible. And this is invertible if the determinant is non-zero. Yes.
So in general, for field gravity, so you have the six dimensional hypersurface there.
Yeah.
Then you have six different flows there. And you fix gauge every of the flows. So in the end, you end up with the point, which is the physical thing.
Which, or a point, yeah. So
it will be a point.
So in some examples, it's a point. And in some examples, so here it's not six, but it's six times infinity. And then you divide a lot of infinity, and then sometimes it happens that infinity times divided by infinity gives you a finite number. So, you know, the flow, so locally you're right, but what I gave you here is a very local picture. You know, it might happen that the flow, the gauge orbits, for instance, are not connected, or there are large gauge transformations and so on. And this local counting does not apply in all cases. So you're right in the sense that we don't get infinitely many degrees, physical degrees of freedom. You know, so I'm sorry, but for this discussion, like 3D gravity is kind of a bad example. But you know, imagine some finite, some other example, which we have in a minute. So we will see in a minute one example with one constraint. Actually, have seen this example, where there is some physical observable left. Actually, two. So in this case, so physical observables are constant on the gauge orbits. Now I explained to you that the t's have to have non-vanishing Poisson brackets with the constraints to give you good gauge fixings, because they are not supposed to be constant along the gauge orbits. And if something is supposed to be constant along the gauge orbits, you can guess what you have to demand. It's an O. Yeah, exactly. So this has to be zero. And again, this, you know, we are only interested in the constrained hypersurface. So this has to hold only modulo constraints. So which means on the right hand side, you can have something which vanishes on the constrained hypersurface, or which includes like any constraint terms or so on. And these things. And typically, you know, there's actually lots of discussion sometimes about this thing, which I summarize as problem of time. I don't think that this is so much a problem classically, but it has deep implications for the quantum theory. So I claimed at some point that the constraints in 3D gravity generate, you know, time evolution. And here you see that any observable has to be constant with respect to this time evolution. So people spoke of the frozen time picture. However, if you go to so-called relational variables, variational observables, you can reconstruct a time evolution. And let me just mention it here. In order, the way to construct these observables is actually you can use these gauge fixings. So choose these gauge fixings, you know, and then take some phase-based function f. F is some phase-based function, and then find out what is the value of f on these gauge fixings on the constrained hypersurface. And what we have to do to define an observable which is supposed to define at least on the full constrained hypersurface is we say FF on a phase space point P So this depends also on you know, the choices of t and tau and so on. But basically what I've written here, we take capital, the value of capital F on any phase space point as the value of little f on the point where the gauge fixing cuts through the gauge orbit. So if I want to know my capital F here, I have first to find this point here and take this value for small f. And by construction, you know, this thing is constant on the gauge orbit because if I'm here, I have to do the same thing. I have to go to the same point here and take this as a value of capital F. And yeah, you can give even formulas for these things. In principle, the point is that, again, the problem is to find good gauge fixings. And it's hard to compute. So for 4D, even for 3D, it's not very easy to compute Dirac observables. Also, we can construct, you know, we know in principle what to construct, and you can compute them. But it's not straightforward. And in 4D, it's almost impossible to get them as explicit phase-based functions. of course, you see that you have to solve the time evolution flow here. So let me mention one thing. Here we have these parameters tau. And I told you this description for general tau. So if you change tau, you know, you actually move this gauge fixings here, and your observable will change. And actually, in the tutorial, you had already such a complete observable, which was called relational, or sometimes it's called complete, for the parameterized particle. OK. So are there any questions to that? Because for this?
Can I clarify what is big F? So it's a function for the observable, or what is it?
So capital F, yeah, I mean, the notation is a bit terrible because you have too many symbols there. So capital F is a phase-based function. It is associated to your choice of F for little f. The subindex. P here is a phase-based point. And then I just, you know, emphasize that everything depends on these parameters tau, because in the end you get a dependence on these parameters, which are just constants. And to confuse you more, these things are also called sometimes evolving constants of motion. So they are constant. They are constant of motion in a sense. But you get some evolution if you change tau. But they are constant on the gauge orbit in phase space for every tau fixed. Okay, so this FF is a phase space function. FF tau is a phase space function which here I evaluated on P. So probably I should write it the other way around. I will give you an example in 10 minutes, which you probably have already computed on Thursday, I think, for the parameterized particle. where I will remind you that this is just an evolving constant of motion. I just need to go through this parameterized particle. Okay. You can have also arbitrary many exercises in computing these things. Yeah.
What is small f?
Small f is an arbitrary phase space function. I mean, it can be arbitrary, but you should, of course, select it so that you get something nice. Yeah, I gave you some general rule to take any phase space function and to compute an associated observable given some gauge fixings. So now what will happen sometimes is, say, if you can try, if you take T itself as F, you know, as an exercise, you can try to figure out what you get. The answer is not very interesting. And if you take the constraint also, the constraint itself, you will get something, for instance, which is just constraint. So if you take these things, you don't get any interesting observable. So you have to find something, some sufficiently interesting little f to get a sufficiently interesting capital F. Yeah.
So just to clarify, which is the observable?
The observable is, let me write it this way. So F TK tau K. You know, now in this notation of mine, this is a phase space function. And it is an observable. And as such, it's will satisfy that it commutes with all the constraints, at least on the constraint hypersurface. So here and here is a little piece. P and P prime are two phase space points. This almost concludes the classical part. And now you might think I go on to quantized gravity. Unfortunately, I have to bother with you with the parameterized particle. So you got an idea what the problems are if you try to quantize gravity canonically. You see that we have these constraints and gauge fixings and so on. And what we have to discuss now is how do you quantize such a system? And the problem is that we have this big phase space and it has a bit of physical information, if you're lucky, but it has lots of information which you are not so interested in, which just describe your choice of gauge fixing. And the general rule is that you don't really want to associate any quantum fluctuations to your choice of gauge fixing because it's just the choice which you make and it should be not the physical fluctuation. So what you want to have in the end is just things which are gauge invariant. You want to have a gauge invariant wave functions in a sense. And also, we have seen that only the points on the constrained hypersurface can be evolved in a solution. So everything else doesn't really correspond to a solution. And we have to, you know, tell the quantum theory that we are actually only interested in the points on the constrained hypersurface. Quantization of gauge systems. And here we have, again, canonical quantization. And for constrained systems, the procedure, which I will mention, is Dirac quantization. And there is so-called reduced phase-space quantization. And there is Bézier-Kovoyan quantization. Sometimes it's called Kovoyan quantization for some reason. Which in this case is a path integral quantization. And what we will do is we will motivate this path integral quantization from actually Dirac quantization. And after we have done that, we can go on and quantize gravity. But we do that now for the parameterized particle, because for the parameterized particle, we already more or less know everything. And we can compare everything to each other. And it's one of the few systems where you can make this more or less precise. Okay, and for the parameterized particle, you might remember from the tutorial, you start with, you know, a quantum mechanical system. So you have just given Q, and usually T is an evolution parameter. And you have a Lagrangian, which is Q, which is a function of Q and Q dot, where dot is the derivative with respect to T. However, now we want to take T as dynamical variable. And to do that, you need a new evolution parameter. Which I will call S. I'm afraid some of the notation might be different than in the tutorial. And one can take this Lagrangian. So it uses the Lagrangian which comes from the non-parameterized system and take it q prime, t prime. So prime now denotes the derivative with respect to s. And q prime divided by t prime is equal to q dot, because that is dq ds divided by dt ds, and that is equal to dq dt. And t prime times ds is dt ds times ds, so you get dt. So you see that in principle you have written basically the same Lagrangian function gives you the same number, the same action on a given orbit, just that you allow reparametrizations of this orbit. And these reparametrizations are basically, you know, the same as in general relativity. They are transformations of your time coordinate. So in this sense, it is the same symmetry. So you expect a constraint. And indeed, if you compute what is your momentum pt, you will find, you know, do the usual thing. You take the variational derivative of your action with respect to, now usually it's t dot, but we introduced s, and now it's t prime. And you see here, there's a t prime here. So we get just the entire Lagrange function. And we see another t prime, which divides q prime here. So that means it's a partial derivative of our Lagrange function with respect to the second entry, which usually is q dot. So it's dl dq dot times the derivative of q prime divided by t prime with respect to t prime. And there you get a minus q prime divided by t prime squared. And from here, you have still this factor t prime, you get a t prime. So dl dq prime is what we usually would call the, in the non-parameterized system, the momentum conjugated to q. And it turns out here also to be the momentum conjugated to q, as you can check. And here we have basically q prime divided by t prime. And this is again q prime divided by t prime. Q dot. So what we have here is pt is equal to l minus pq q dot. And you might remember this expression for being minus the Hamiltonian. So this is the Hamiltonian for the unparameterized system. Which you get by just making a Legendre transformation of L with respect to only Q or Q dot. Okay, so you might remember this from the tutorial. But what we have here is again that we found a relation which only involves phase-based variables, which don't appear with any time derivatives or derivatives with respect to s. So we just have the relation that pt is equal to minus the Hamiltonian, and the Hamiltonian is only a function of PQ and Q. So we find a constraint which has to hold. And as you can easily check, TC. So you get also from this that T PT is equal to 1 and Q PQ is equal to 1. So you get that T with C gives 1. So this already tells us that the constraints, that the constraint indeed generates, you know, evolution in time, in this case in T. And P, say QC, indeed gives you QH, which indeed gives you Q dot for, as a general rule, for the unparameterized system. So now we have a system where the constraints generate time evolution, but according to the general stuff which we said before, this time evolution is actually a gauge transformation. And this means that you can multiply the constraint with an arbitrary constant or phase space function, and we would just get another parameterization of our orbit. And indeed, what happens is that we draw TQ, and I'll typically say for the free particle, you always get for different n, for different Hamiltonians with different choices of parameters n, if you would draw the resulting solution in this diagram, we get always the same line here. It's just that this line, you know, is described by QS and TS with some parameter S. And what happens, choosing different n, you just run through this line with different velocities with respect to your parameter S. But you are not interested in this parameterization. You are just interested in this line. So that's all what happens. And now we can basically again question, oh, time evolution is a gauge symmetry, so everything has to be a constant of motion. But you have not to forget that we have one variable more. And if you compute the thing which I wrote here, so I compute f computed to associated to little f, which in this case is q, and I have to choose a gauge fixing. And not very surprisingly, I take capital T as t. And I want to know what this is for, say, the free particle. then let's see. I mean, you can compute that, but you can also try to think. And what we have written there is that F associated to Q gives us the value where our gauge fixing gives us the value tau. So basically, we asked for Q at the point where T is equal to tau. And if you make this little exercise, you will actually find this result. So it's Q plus PQ divided by M tau minus T.
Capital T is equal to T of tau.
No, capital T is a phase-based function. So it's T. T is now a phase-based function. Tau is a parameter, like 5. I'm not using units. I'm bad with units. So 5 seconds, I guess. And now, you know, you get basically FQ of tau. You know, so I told you that is F of, you know, this is F gives you the value of Q at the point where T is equal to tau. Put T equal to tau here. And indeed, you find, oh, it's Q. You know, so that's what the meaning is. but it also gives you a prediction. So if you have a certain phase-based point and want to know what will be my value for Q if my T happens to be tau, you basically predict your value of Q, which means these things give you actually predictions for you, the values of your phase-based functions. given some values of your clock. So I hope I didn't make any sign or error. So since you all don't seem to believe me that this is a an observer, you can compute the Poisson brackets. The C in this case is PT plus PQ. So sorry, he said has to be a little index Q here, divided by 2m. And this is Q plus PQ m tau minus T. So let's first figure out T with PT here. Gives us minus PQ divided by M. And the other thing which appears here is Q with PQ divided by 2M. So this is indeed zero, it's indeed the Dirac observer. And yeah, I mean, it's really just that under evolution, Q changes, and Q changes by an amount PQ divided by M times T, and T changes, and if you take N equal to 1, changes exactly by the same value, PQ M minus T, and these changes cancel out. Okay, also for the free particle, what is your momentum at the point where T is equal to tau? Now the momentum for the free particle does not change much, doesn't change at all. So you will always find that this is equal to P cow, P to the momentum conjugated to Q. So what we found is basically two Dirac observables. Dirac observables, one does not depend on tau, the other does. And this is just a very cumbersome way to actually express the dynamics of a particle, just that you do that in this gauge system way. And you can go through all kinds of phase space functions and will always find combinations of these observables or zero or a constant. So this is a complete set of Dirac observables. And these are two. And it corresponds to the dimension of the unparametrized system, of course, which is, you know, 1 plus 1 is 2, or the so-called reduced phase space. Okay, it's not really magic, you know. You just need to sit down and do get used to that. As a little exercise, you can try out to find to take a funny time, which is Q, and find out what f of t is. Sorry. You know, here we told I told you that if I choose as my gauge fixing the time itself, it tells me what is the value of Q when at the point where my T is equal to tau. Here I've inverted T and Q. So here I asked, what is my value of T if I'm at the point where my position is at Q? So you basically asked, what is my time if my point particle arrives at Q? And that is known as the time of arrival operator. And there's an entire book on just the problem of how to quantize the time of arrival operator. And you might try to guess if you see this expression for this expression as a function of phase space, you know, why it is so difficult to quantize the thing. The reason for that is that Q, even locally, in many points, it's a very good clock, but it has a drawback because Q, as you know, sometimes it runs forward and sometimes it runs backwards. And the general reason for that is that the momentum conjugated to Q appears quadratic in the constraints. So you could say, okay, for quantum gravity, we should maybe try to find a gauge fixing where this doesn't happen, and we try to find gauge fixings where the constraints are linear in the conjugated momenta. However, there's nothing natural which comes to mind. And indeed, the absence of convenient times, you can describe that as a problem of time. And there's interesting, you know, discussions already for the simple system. For instance, there's a paper by Aharonov and Anru, which you have to ask me for the reference if you're interested in that. And that discusses an additional uncertainty relation. It just discusses an additional uncertainty relation which appears for the time of arrival operator. So this tells you actually that if you don't find good gauge fixings in principle, there's a problem in basically resolving, you know, the measurement of how precise you can make measurements. And that might be actually a general feature of quantum gravity. Okay. So after I have notes for this. I haven't given you them now. But this was also a bit the classical part. So tomorrow we can really start just going fast through quantizing this parameterized particle in three different ways, and then go on to quantize gravity. OK. Are there more questions?